new in his eyes. A distant, well-hidden, but lingering pain.
How old were you?
She asked.
3,
Thrawn said.
For a long time, I assumed she'd died, and that I would never see her again. It wasn't until I reached bridge officer rank that I was finally told about the Skywalkers and realized what must have happened to her.
He gave her a small smile, tinged with the same distant sadness.
And I'll still never see her again.
You might,
Thalia said, moved by an obscure desire to comfort him.
There have to be records somewhere.
I'm sure there are, Thrawn said. But most Skywalkers want to disappear into obscurity after they finish their service. And the Ascendancy's long had a practice of honoring those wishes.
He lifted a hand.
We all have regrets. However, just as we have hopes that will never be fulfilled, the key to a satisfying life is to accept those things that cannot be changed and make a positive difference with those that can.
Yes,
Thalia said. But just because something couldn't be changed didn't mean a person shouldn't hammer away at it anyway. Secrets could sometimes be brought to light. And even Thrawn could be wrong.
In the meantime, we have time to rest and think out our future strategy.
Thrawn continued, pulling a pack of cards from his pocket.
You can choose the first game.
Chapter 14.
Are you certain?
Zistalmu said.
That you know exactly what you're supposed to do?
Ar'alani drew in a deep breath, pulling with it every bit of patience her mind and body could muster.
Yes, Syndic, she said. I think we've been over it enough times.
Because I'm serious,
he went on, as if he hadn't heard her, or more likely didn't believe her.
If either the Garwians or the Vex refuse to give him up, or deny knowing anything about him, we turn the ship around and go home.
I understand, Ar'alani said.
Which wasn't to say that she agreed with him, or that she had any intention of following such a ridiculous order. Defying an aristocrat syndic could mean the end of her career, of course. But she'd put her career on the line so many times before that it was almost becoming routine. What wasn't routine was why Zistalmu and Thurfian both seemed so single-mindedly determined to destroy Thrawn. She'd been mulling over that question since their departure from the Ascendancy, and she was no closer to figuring it out now than she had been then. Maybe it was time she did something about that. She looked over at the navigator station. Chiri was sitting there, her breathing slow and steady, deep in third sight as she guided them toward Primea. Standing beside her was Zistalmu's wife, who'd never offered Ar'alani her proper name, but had instead insisted that everyone aboard call her Nana. A rather annoying affectation, in Ar'alani's opinion. Possibly why the woman had only lasted 2 years as a caregiver. But right now, all that mattered was that for the next minute, neither she nor anyone else was in position to listen in.
A question, Syndic,
Ar'alani said, as Zistalmu started to turn away.
For my own curiosity.
Yes?
She turned her full gaze on him.
Why do you and Syndic Thurfian hate Thrawn so much?
She'd expected some kind of reaction from him. To her surprise, his expression didn't even twitch.
About time,
he said calmly.
I've been expecting you to bring up that topic since we left Sheela.
Sorry, I've had other things on my mind, Ar'alani said. May I have an answer?
First, Ask the correct question,
Sistalmu said.
We don't hate Thrawn. Actually, we both admire his military skill. We resist him because he's a threat to the Ascendancy.
To the Ascendancy, Arulani countered. Or to the Irisi family.
Sistalmu shook his head.
You really don't see it, do you? In that case, there's really no point in continuing this conversation.
Excuse me, Syndic, but there's every reason to continue,
Arulani said.
You're aboard the Vigilant, under my authority, and you're obligated to answer any reasonable question and obey any reasonable order, unless you plan to invoke official Syndicure secrets. And I will follow through on that if you try it. You tell me how Thrawn is a threat to the Ascendancy.
Octrimo called a warning from the helm.
Break out in 30 seconds, Admiral.
Acknowledged.
Arulani raised her eyebrows towards Sistalmu. Talk fast.
There's no time for a proper explanation,
the Syndic said.
But really, you don't need one. You've seen enough of Thrawn and his career to understand. If you don't, it's because you choose not to.
Arulani shook her head. Not good enough.
So you're going to get.
Sistalmu nodded toward the viewport.
And we are here.
Arulani turned to see the hyperspace swirl collapse into star flares and then into stars. Looming directly ahead was a half-lit planet with dozens of ships of all sizes moving in or out or simply drifting steadily along in their orbits.
Premier, Admiral,
Octrimo announced.
I read 47 visible ships,
Senior Commander Biglion added from the sensor station.
Checking configurations for anything that looks Garwian.
Acknowledged,
Arulani said.
Senior Captain Wutraor, a signal to the Planetary Diplomatic Office. Identify us and tell them we are trying to reach Artistic Master Sforno.
Yes, Admiral,
Wutraor said. She leaned over the comms officer's shoulder and began speaking quietly.
I'm not picking up anything that looks like a Garwian,
Biglion reported.
Maybe it's on the other side of the planet.
Admiral, Primea Central Command acknowledges,
Wutraor relayed.
They claim the Garwian diplomatic ship left 3 days ago, with all personnel aboard.
There you go,
Sistalmu said briskly.
Looks like Thrawn managed to extricate himself without any fuss or drama. Now if we can say our farewells and head back to the Ascendancy,
Captain, please ask for clarification,
Arulani ordered.
I want a list of all the personnel on that ship. I also want copies of all transmissions to and from the Garwian before it left.
What makes you think they'll have all that available?
Sistalmu demanded.
Or we'll give it to you if they do.
Captain,
Arulani prompted.
Message delivered,
Wutraor confirmed.
Waiting for a reply.
We've got movement,
Biglion cut in.
5 small ships breaking orbit toward us, and another 8 patrol ships rising from the surface. Make that 9 from the surface.
Patrol ships?
Sistalmu asked, clearly confused.
What are they doing?
You should read the Defense Force's after-action reports more closely, Syndic,
Arulani said, eyeing the small ships assembling between the Vigilant and the planet below.
Small fighters are a line in the dirt. A warning that the defenders are serious.
Yes, I understand that part,
Sistalmu growled.
I'm wondering why they think 14 fighters constitutes any kind of threat. Do they expect them to scare us away?
Of course not, Arulani said. But a couple of wings of fighters isn't as provocative as a group of full-class warships would be. That makes it easier for both sides to back down if neither really wants a fight. And if the intruder does want one, it's not so much of a loss to the defenders if the fighters get blown out of the sky.
But we're not going to do that, are we?
Zistalmu asked, his voice dark and ominous.
Not unless we're attacked first, Arulani said. Captain? Any word on my request?
Central Command says they don't have that information,
Utra-O reported.
They say they have to refer me to the diplomatic service.
I trust they are doing so?
So they say.
Utra-O pointed at the tactical.
Looks like they're working into a lens formation.
Arulani nodded. Or at least 13 of the patrol ships were. The 14th was moving forward, ignoring his companion's more cautious stance.
Octrimo, that fighter on the extreme starboard seems to be spoiling for a fight, she said.
Start drifting us toward him. Nice and easy. Don't make it too obvious.
You think it's him?
Wutra-O asked.
She'll know in a minute,
Arulani said, checking the distance. The patrol ship was almost in range now.
Another few seconds.
Abruptly, a double flare of laser fire blasted from the fighter squarely at the Vigilant.
Hit! On starboard ventral weapons cluster, Bicleon reported tersely.
Low power blast. No damage.
Acknowledged,
Arulani said. Zistalmu inhaled sharply.
What are they doing? I thought you said they weren't trying to be provocative.
Targeting sensors have kicked into rapid record mode,
Wutra-O called.
Modulated laser fire coming in,
Bicleon began.
Thank you, Senior Commander.
Arulani cut him off. She'd known what Thrawn was planning as soon as he opened fire on the sensor cluster, and had hoped she could slide it past Zistalmu without him noticing. No such luck.
Modulated how?
The Syndic asked.
Admiral, the laser is modulated how?
I'm not sure yet, Syndic.
Arulani hedged.
We'll have to see what the computer makes of it.
Let me guess,
Zistalmu said, eyes narrowed with suspicion.
That's Thrawn, isn't it? And somehow he's adapted the fighter's laser to transmit a message. Isn't that it?
Arulani mouthed a silent curse. So much for keeping the Syndic in the dark long enough to bring Thrawn aboard. So much, too, for keeping Thrawn's favored method for surreptitious communication secret. Up to now, only she and Thrawn had known how he'd managed his communication with the Garweans during the Leo Aeoan pirate attack on Stivik all those years ago. He'd obviously planned in advance to pull the same trick here, knowing that Arulani would recognize it and be able to extract the message. What he couldn't have anticipated was Zistalmu inviting himself onto the mission. The question of Thrawn's possible interference in that particular incident had long since been forgotten. But all it would take was Zistalmu putting the pieces together to drag it back into the light. And with Zistalmu and Thurfian both out for Thrawn's blood, that could be a serious problem. Right now, Arulani had more pressing matters to deal with. Two of the Vak patrol ships had broken out of their lens formation and were pursuing Thrawn's ship. So far, they hadn't fired, but someone had clearly figured out that the rogue fighter had been commandeered and was hoping to stop it. Meanwhile, off to portside, two much larger Vak warships had come into view around the planetary rim, moving steadily toward the Vigilant. And then, around the planetary rim to starboard, a much larger ship had appeared. A Nicardoon warship.
Vec warships moving toward portside flank,
Wutra-O called.
Close combat distance in 2.3 minutes. Patrol ships moving up a defensive lens. Combat distance 90 seconds.
Picture coming through,
Bicleon reported.
On sensor 2.
Arulani looked at the specified display. The data Thrawn was sending seemed to be a schematic of one of the Vak patrol ships. She smiled tightly. A schematic, moreover, with all the weapons and targeting sensor systems marked. Everything she would need to take all the fight out of them without loss of life or serious damage to the ships themselves.
"Prepare lasers,"
she ordered.
"Target patrol ships, weapon sensors. Target very carefully. I don't want any additional damage."
"Just a moment," Zistalmu cut in.
"Are you mad? You can't launch an unprovoked attack."
"It's not unprovoked,"
Utro said.
"One of them fired on us, remember?"
"That was Thrawn."
"So you've suggested," Arulani said evenly.
"Until that's been confirmed, we operate on the assumption that the Vax have attacked us. Captain Vutra'o, pick three of the patrol ships and fire."
"Belay that order!"
Zistalmu snapped.
"I forbid any action. You will prepare to withdraw."
"Incoming!" Bicleon snapped. "Four heavy cruisers coming in from hyperspace behind us."
"Acknowledged,"
Arulani said, feeling a sudden sense of unreality as she gazed at the display. They were heavy cruisers, all right, arrayed in a diamond combat formation. Only they weren't Vax ships, or even Nicardoon. They were Leo Aowen.
"Yaw, turn 180, she ordered. "Standby lasers and spheres are new targets."
"Leo Aowen flagship is signaling, Admiral,"
the comm officer called. She touched a switch.
"To intruder."
A Leo Aowen voice came over the speaker, its Minisiat clear and precise.
"You are threatening the peace and safety of the Vac Combine. Leave immediately or be fired upon."
"Admiral,"
Zistalmu began.
"Quiet,"
Arulani cut him off as she tapped her comm switch.
"This is Admiral Arulani aboard the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet ship Vigilant," she said. "We mean no harm to Primea or the Combine. One of our people has gone missing, and we're here to inquire about his whereabouts."
The words were barely out of her mouth when all four Leo Aoi ships opened fire.
"Barriers up!" Utro'o barked. "Target enemy lasers! Prepare spheres!"
Arulani added, her brain spinning as she tried to figure out what in the hell was going on. What were Leo Aoi even doing here at Primea, let alone attacking a Chiss warship on sight? And then, suddenly she got it. Damn the Nicardoon, anyway.
"Spheres! Fire when ready,"
she bit out.
"Target all Leo Aoi ships. Concentrate on weapons clusters. Enemy lasers impacting on the hull,"
Utro'o reported, her voice tight but controlled.
"Barriers diffusing about 80%. Spheres on their way."
Arulani nodded. Enough plasmasphere impacts, enough ion bursts eating into the electronics, and the attacker's ability to continue fighting would be neutralized. But it would take half a dozen shots to sufficiently disable any one of the ships. And there were four of them for her to deal with. And the Vigilant had only a limited number of spheres available. Unless...
"Continue targeting weapons,"
she ordered, searching the displays. Thrawn's patrol ship. There it was, coming up fast. The two Vac fighters that had been in pursuit, she noted, were falling back. Apparently, they didn't want him badly enough to charge into a combat zone. Perfect.
"Octremo, what's our best course out of here?"
she called.
"Wait!"
Zistalmu protested.
"Now, when we're actually attacked, now you want to run?"
"Shut it!"
Arulani said.
"Octremo?"
"Pistix at route is portside,"
Octremo reported.
"But that vector will take us into close combat range with both 3 and 4.
The Leo Aowen ship designated as 4, Arulani noted, being the one farthest to portside. Time to gamble.
"Concentrate sphere fire on 3,
she said.
"Octremo, take us out on your vector."
"On 3?
Zistalmu put in.
"But 4's closer!"
"If I have to tell you again to be quiet, I'll have you removed from the bridge,"
Aralani warned. Zistalmu sputtered something, but fell silent. The laser fire from the four Leoaoan ships was increasing as the Vigilant headed toward the open space to the Leoaoan formation's left. Attackers 3 and 4 began moving sideways to block the Chiss escape, though 3's efforts were now being slowed by the cascade of plasma spheres hammering into its hull. But with the flanking fire from 1 and 2 continuing to blast away at the Vigilant's starboard hull, even just a single Leoaoan in front of the Vigilant would make escape problematic. Presumably, the Leoaoi and their Nicardoon masters knew that and were counting on it. Unfortunately for them, they'd all forgotten about Thrawn. The back patrol ship shot past the Vigilant on full power, ducking through the scattered laser fire from the Leoaoan ships, charging straight toward Attacker 4 with lasers blazing. Aralani held her breath, waiting for the Leoaoan to respond, wondering if she and Thrawn had read the situation correctly. They had. For those first crucial seconds, the Leoaoan didn't return fire, having apparently been ordered to shoot at the Chiss warship, but avoid combat with Nicardoon and the local Vak forces. She could envision the frantic calls from the Leoaoi to Primea, the questions running up the chain of command, transferring over to the Nicardoon warship, the furious corrections coming from the general in charge, possibly heading directly to the Leoaoi, possibly having to go the reverse path so as not to give the Chiss confirmation that the Nicardoon were even involved. And as the farce finally played itself out, the Leoaoan ships belatedly opened fire. But it was too late. Thrawn's surgical attack had already destroyed Four's combat ability, tearing into the ship's heavy laser sights and blinding their missile fire control sensors. For a moment, the other three Leoaoi continued to fire. But as the Vigilant drove through Four's shadow, their weapons went silent, lest they hit their comrade. Thrawn's fighter finished its run and turned toward the Vigilant, and jerked suddenly as a final laser shot sliced across its aft thrusters.
"Hit on patrol ship!"
Utra-O snapped.
"Tractor beam,"
Aralani snapped back.
"Bring him in." "On it,"
Utra-O confirmed.
"Tractor engaged. Locked. Bringing him in."
"Starboard spheres. One final volley," Aralani ordered.
"Keep them back."
"Vak warships moving up,"
Bicleon warned. But it was a waste of effort, and everyone knew it. The Vigilant would be far enough out of Primea's gravity well in 20 seconds, and would have Thrawn aboard in 30. The only ships close enough to stop them were the Leoaoan cruisers. And thanks to her and Thrawn's combined attack, they too were out of luck.
"Skywalker Chiri, get ready," she called.
"She's ready,"
Zistalmu's wife said. Aralani scowled.
"Skywalker Chiri,"
she asked pointedly.
"I'm ready, Admiral,"
the girl's voice came back. Her confirmation was quieter and maybe a little more tentative than Nana's, but it confirmed to Aralani that Chiri was indeed ready. Aralani had had other caregivers insist on speaking for their young charges instead of letting them speak for themselves. She'd never liked it then either.
"Good," she said. "As soon as we confirm Captain Thrawn's aboard, we'll go. Captain Utra-O?"
"Almost there,"
Utra-O said. There was a small clunking sound as the shrapnel from a pair of disintegrated Leoaoan missiles bounced off the Vigilant's hull near the viewport. One final desperate, useless attack.
"Aboard,"
Utra-O confirmed.
"Crash webbing's deployed. Confirmed capture. Outer hatch closing. Outer hatch sealed."
"All right, Chiri. We've got him,"
Aralani said. A long road, with a blaze of fire and noise at the end of it. She could only hope Thrawn had found everything he'd come here for.
"Take us home."
Memories 9.
"How much longer?"
Senior Captain Ziara asked.
2 minutes,
the tense reply came from the helm. Ziara nodded, wincing to herself. 2 minutes. 2 hours since Thrawn's emergency call, with no communication possible in hyperspace, and now 2 more minutes. Depending on how deep the excursion liner had been in the planetary gravity well when Thrawn and his newly assigned patrol boat reached it, Ziara and the Paralla would arrive just in time to join Thrawn in watching helplessly as 8,000 people fell to their blazing deaths in the thick planetary atmosphere.
Tractor beams ready? She asked.
Ready and waiting, Captain.
Standing by for breakout, the pilot announced. 3, 2, 1.
The hyperspace swirl vanished, and there, 10 kilometers ahead, the drama stretched out in front of them. Ship losses of this sort were rare these days, but no less horrific for all that. The excursion liner, a compact cylinder with a pair of wide, D-shaped wings stretching out on opposite sides and housing the more expensive suites, was deep into the roiling upper atmosphere of the triple-ringed gas giant planet it had been cruising past. Already its wake was visible as it plowed through the tenuous gases, the drag eroding its orbital velocity and threatening it with a death spiral into the crushing depths. A few hundred meters in front of it, trailing a smaller wake, was the BOCO, straining for all it was worth to stabilize the liner. Straining and losing. Even without running the numbers, Ziara could see that the sheer difference in mass between the two ships would make it impossible for the BOCO to pull the liner free. In fact, even adding the Paralla's tractors to the mix might not be enough.
Senior Captain Ziara,
Thrawn's voice came from the bridge speaker.
Thank you for your prompt response. Would you join me off the liner's bow?
On our way,
Ziara said, gesturing the order to the helm. The sensor display lit up with the relevant numbers. Just as she'd feared.
But it won't do any good, she added quietly. Even together we can't make this work. Are the passengers off yet?
Unfortunately, no,
Thrawn said.
By the time the thrusters failed, the liner was already too deep in the radiation and magnetic bands to launch escape pods.
They're still aboard?
It's all right,
Thrawn said.
The passengers and crew are all gathered in the central cylinder behind adequate shielding.
Ziara hissed between her teeth. That wasn't at all what she'd meant.
Did you get through to anyone else?
She asked, her eyes running down the numbers. Another hour, and even a full night dragon wouldn't be able to tow the liner free.
No one else is coming,
Thrawn said.
Please hurry. Time is short.
Short? Someone muttered. More like non-existent.
Just pull us parallel to him,
Ziara said, wondering what Thrawn had in mind.
In position, Captain, the pilot called.
Tractors on,
the weapons officer added.
Status? No good. Liner's still drag...
An instant later, she broke off with a startled gasp as the Paralla jerked violently.
BOCO's dropped its tractors!
Increase thrust,
Ziara ordered, staring at the display. Not only had the BOCO disengaged its tractors, but it had veered away from the Paralla and was making a tight curve back toward the liner. And as the BOCO settled into position alongside the liner, its spectrum lasers flashed, blasting into the junction points where the portside luxury wing connected to the central cylinder.
Captain, he's attacking them!
The sensor officer yelped.
Stand fast,
Ziara said.
Ready emergency power to the thrusters.
But Captain!
I said stand fast,
Ziara snapped.
Don't you see? He's lightening the ship.
The words were barely out of her mouth when the portside wing broke away. The sudden change in the liner's mass again sending a jolt along the tractor beam line and into the Paralla. The BOCO was already moving to the liner's other side, blasting away at the connectors of the starboard wing. Ciara watched, bracing herself. The wing snapped away and disappeared into the atmosphere below.
Emergency power,
Ciara ordered.
Get us out of here!
And as the Piralla vibrated and creaked with the additional stress, the liner finally began to move away from the planet. A moment later, there was another smaller jolt as the BOCO returned to Ziara's side and added its own tractors and thrusters to the effort. Slowly but steadily, they eased the liner out of the atmosphere and the gravity well. 15 minutes later, the crisis was over.
Thank you for your assistance, Senior Captain Ziara.
Thrawn's voice came as the two ships finally cut back on their thrusters and disengaged their tractors.
Without you, the liner would indeed have been lost.
Thank you, in turn, for your quick thinking, Ziara said, eyeing the liner.
The ship's beautiful external wings gone, with their fancy suites, and no doubt the inhabitants' fancy possessions gone with them.
A word of warning, though. If I were you, I wouldn't expect a lot of thanks from anyone else.
You've never been to Chila, have you?
Ciara asked, as the shuttle headed down toward the shimmery blue-white surface of the Chiss homeworld.
No,
Thrawn said, gazing out the viewport.
All my training and briefings took place at the Expansionary Fleet Complex on Naperra.
Ciara peered at his profile. There was a tightness around his eyes and lips.
You seem worried.
Worried?
The state of seeing large night hunters lurking in your future, Ciara said. You know you have nothing to be concerned about, right? The liner owners can squawk all they want, but the fact remains that you saved 8,000 people who otherwise would be compressed mush right now.
I imagine anything resembling mush would have long since dissipated into tendrils of shredded organic molecules within the atmospheric currents.
Oh, I like that one, Ciara said. Okay if I borrow it?
You're welcome to it.
Thrawn nodded at the planet.
No. I was just thinking. I've been in trouble before, but I've never been called to such a high-level hearing.
Because all the other questionable things you did were essentially military,
Ciara reminded him.
This one is essentially civilian. More important, it's civilian connected to one of the 9 families. That puts you on everyone's scanners.
Yet you suggest I don't need to worry.
No, because the passenger list included Aristocra from at least 5 of the other 9 families,
Ciara said.
When peak comes to poke, 5-1 odds makes a pretty decent battle position.
I hope it won't come to that.
Thrawn nodded toward the viewport.
Is that Chaplar?
Ziara craned her neck. Barely visible in the otherwise featureless surface was what appeared to be a massive city frozen in the ice.
Yes,
she confirmed.
Capital of the Chiss Ascendancy, and once the flower spray of culture and refinement. We'll be landing at the spaceport on the southwest edge and taking a tunnel car westward to Fleet Headquarters. You won't see that complex from up here, by the way. It's mostly underground.
Yes, I know,
Thrawn said.
You say Chaplar was once a center of culture. Not anymore?
Sadly, no, Ciara said. But it really was marvelous once.
Odd,
Thrawn said, sounding a bit confused.
I would think that a city population of 7 million would be more than enough to support both the government and the arts.
One would think so,
Ciara agreed, looking casually around the shuttle. Too many people. but there would be plenty of time later to tell him the truth.
But don't worry. I'm sure we'll find something down there to do.
The hearing, as Ziara had predicted, was short and perfunctory. The Boadil family, which had owned the doomed liner, had sent a representative who loudly insisted that Thrawn be punished, demoted, or possibly thrown out of the expansionary defense fleet altogether. Three of the five families whose members had been saved from death were also represented, countering that Thrawn deserved promotion, not censure. In the end, it all balanced out, and Thrawn ended up exactly where he'd started. With one crucial exception. For whatever reason, for whatever obscure political favor someone owed someone else, Thrawn's patrol ship, his very first command, was taken away from him.
"I'm so sorry,"
Ziara commiserated, as she and Thrawn rode their tunnel car back to the city.
"I never expected the fleet to do that."
"It's all right," Thrawn said.
His voice was calm, but Ziara could hear the disappointment beneath it.
"Considering how many millions I cost the Boadil, neither of us should be surprised by their vindictiveness."
"You didn't cost anyone anything," Ziara ground out. "You didn't take the liner too close to that planet. You didn't ignore the engineers who warned the electronics for having trouble with the magnetic field twists. You didn't push the engines and scramble the thrusters in the first place. If I were the Boadil, I'd be looking to nail the liner's captain to the floor, not you."
Except they wouldn't, she knew, feeling the sharp edge of bitterness. The Boadil were political allies with both the Ufsa and her own Irizi family. And the liner's captain had been Ufsa. Thrawn was the only scapegoat available for the mess. And so he'd received the full brunt of Boadil anger and embarrassment.
"Thank you," Thrawn said. "But you don't need to be angry on my behalf. Together, we saved 8,000 lives. That's what's important."
Ziara nodded.
"Yes, absolutely."
"So,"
Thrawn said, his tone businesslike again,
"with my command gone, I no longer have convenient passage off Chila. I presume the fleet will take note of that and find me transport to wherever post they next assign me."
"Hopefully they won't need to go out of their way on that count," Ciara said. "I've already put in a request for you to be reassigned to the Parala as one of my officers. If that's approved, you'll leave with me."
"Thank you,"
Thrawn said, inclining his head toward her.
"I noticed a number of hotels clustered around the spaceport. I can find housing there while I await my new orders."
"You could,"
Ziara said, pursing her lips thoughtfully. The thought that had just occurred to her. The family wouldn't be happy about it, she knew. But right now, she didn't really care. Thrawn had been unfairly dumped on. And if she couldn't fix it, she could at least show him that he hadn't been abandoned by the entire Ascendancy.
"But I've got a better idea," she said. "We've got at least a few days, more likely a week. Why don't you come to the Irizi homestead with me?"
"To your homestead?"
Thrawn echoed.
"Are strangers even allowed?"
A muscle in his cheek twitched.
"Especially strangers from rival families."
"I don't know and I don't care," Ziara said. "I'm Blood, and I am an honored member of the fleet who just helped save 8,000 lives. I don't know how far all that will take me, but I'd rather like to find out. You game to find out with me?"
"I don't know,"
Thrawn said hesitantly.
"I don't want you to get in trouble on my behalf."
"I'm not worried about it," Ciara said. "Did I mention that my grandfather was an amazing, passionate art collector?"
Thrawn smiled.
"If I haven't mentioned it recently, Ziara, you have a knack for seeking out and exploiting your opponent's weaknesses. Very well. Shall we once again charge headlong into danger?
We shall, Ciara said. Besides, we've just survived an encounter with a malicious gas giant planet. Really, how bad could my family be?
The area around the Chaplar spaceport was loud and busy. Crowded with people, hotels, restaurants, and entertainment of all sorts. The Arisi homestead was about 300 kilometers to the northeast, on the far side of the city. Ziara got them a two-person express overground tube car, and they headed off. Across the city, not as was usually done around it. She wasn't supposed to do that, she knew. Thrawn wasn't supposed to know the truth about the Ascendancy's capital city. No one except senior syndics, flag officers, and the patriarchs of the nine families knew the full truth. And there were plenty of tunnel car routes that would avoid the above-ground sections entirely. But once again, she didn't care. The fleet and Aristocra had treated Thrawn shamefully, and her lingering anger over that had awakened a peculiar but surprisingly delicious sense of defiance. Besides, she reminded herself as they left the spaceport and headed through the buildings and parks and the maze of other overground tubes, it would be an interesting tactical exercise to see how long it took Thrawn to figure it out. Not long at all, as it turned out. They'd crossed a little more than a third of the sprawling metropolis, and she was watching his expression closely as he stared out the viewport. When his eyes suddenly narrowed,
"Something's wrong," he said.
"What do you mean?" Ciara asked.
"There don't seem to be any people here," Thrawn said. "Not since we left the spaceport area."
"Of course there are," Ciara said, pointing across the way at another tube car paralleling theirs in the distance. "You can see two people right there."
"They're the exceptions," Thrawn said. "The other cars we've seen have been empty."
"Maybe they're just too far away for you to see inside," Ciara said, feeling both guilty and surprised at how much fun this game was. "You can see that the car exteriors tend to be reflective."
"No," Thrawn said. "The empty cars ride higher on their rails than the full ones. We've also passed through three connecting loci, and there were no cars or passengers waiting at any of them." He turned, fixing her with such an intense look that she reflexively drew back a little. "What's happened to our capital, Ziara?"
"The same thing that happened to the whole planet," Ciara said quietly. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that to you. But you're not supposed to know."
"To know what? That the people of Chila are gone?"
"Oh, they're not gone," she said. "Well, yes, most of them are. But the big exodus happened over 1,000 years ago. But they taught you in school about how changes in the sun's output and the slow freezing of the surface forced the population of Chila underground is mostly true. What the histories leave out is that the numbers that were moved below were a far cry from the 4 billion who'd been living here at the time."
"Where did they go?"
"Other planets," Ziara said. "Mostly Rentor, Avedich, and Sarvchi. The Syndicure and fleet headquarters were kept here, along with a lot of the cargo and merchant facilities. Some of the families moved their homesteads to worlds where they already had strong presences, but most didn't want to leave Chila entirely."
"They also moved underground?"
"Right," Ciara said. "My family's new homestead, well, new as of 1,000 years ago, is a huge cavern about 2 kilometers below the surface.
Still on our same land, of course. The Irisi are a bit obsessive about territory and history.
So how many people actually live on Chila?
60 or 70 million,
Ziara said.
Though all of the official records put the number at 8 billion.
She waved at the city around them.
All the rest of this is just for show.
For whom?
Our visitors, she said. Our alien trading partners.
She felt her throat tighten.
Our enemies.
So if you continue to live above ground to create the illusion, Thrawn murmured. Light and heat are also maintained. Tube cars continue to travel across the remaining cities, pretending to be the traffic of a thriving population. He looked at Ciara. I presume that on the far side, our tube will descend into one of the tunnels. She nodded.
There are a few hundred people in Chapla at any given time. They are rotated out frequently, so they don't have to put up with the conditions up here for very long. The rest of the city, the real city, is spread out in caverns, mostly concentrated around the Syndicure complex. More illusion for our diplomatic visitors.
And of course, most civilian visitors and merchants stay close to one of the spaceports, Thrawn said, nodding. The activity there and around the government complex disguises the emptiness of the rest of the city.
Right, Ciara said. Your next question is probably why this is all such a big secret.
Not at all, Thrawn assured her. I understand the strategic advantages of maneuvering a potential enemy into wasting a massive amount of force on what's essentially an empty shell.
He looked her squarely in the eye.
My question is, why you've told me all this? Surely I'm not senior enough for that kind of classified information. Especially not after today.
I told you because you thrive on information, Ciara said.
Her anger-driven defiance was starting to fade, leaving a bit of discomfort behind. The law was clear. Officers of Thrawn's current rank weren't supposed to know any of this.
The more you know about the situation, the better you are at coming up with the strategy and tactics necessary to handle it. Anyway, you'll be called in for the top-level briefing soon enough.
She felt her lips pucker.
When that happens, try to act surprised.
I will, he promised. Speaking of surprises, does your family know you're bringing a guest?
Ziara shook her head.
No, but it won't be a problem.
Thrawn raised his eyebrows slightly.
You assume?
Yes, Ziara conceded. I assume.
Chapter 15. The law was clear. The Vigilant had been attacked by forces of the Leo Aeoan regime. The attackers had identified themselves as such, removing any questions as to whether they might be pirates or privateers or some other unofficial and unauthorized group. The Defense Hierarchy Council had certain required responses to such a situation, as did the Aristocra and the Syndicure. The law was clear, which wasn't to say that any of those groups was at all enthusiastic about carrying out their duties.
This, Second Officer Carroll said, is madness.
Simakro gazed out the viewport at the roiling hyperspace sky. Personally, he couldn't agree more with his subordinate's assessment. But Carroll was his subordinate, and Simakro was the Springhawk's first officer, and part of his duty was to quash talk like that aboard his ship.
The ancient philosophers would agree with you, he said. On the other hand, most of those same philosophers would say that all war is madness. Take that to its logical extreme,
and we're all out of a job.
Maybe, Carol said. I can't say I'd be opposed to a few years of peace.
That might depend on the underlying cause of that peace,
Thrawn said from behind them.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Senior Captain,
Simakro said, hastily standing up from the command chair and turning as Thrawn stepped through the hatchway onto the bridge. To his mild surprise, Thrawn waved him back down.
I'm not taking over your watch, Mid-Captain, he said. I only stopped by to check on our progress.
We're on schedule, sir,
Simakro said, looking over at the navigator station. Chiri was sitting upright in her seat, showing none of the subtle signs of Skywalker fatigue that would require a return to space normal and a rest period. In contrast, Thalias, holding watch behind the girl, was sagging where she stood, apparently right on the edge of falling asleep. But then she'd been with Thrawn on the Vak homeworld of Primea, a witness to everything that happened there, that had put her under the spotlight for the same wearying round of council and sindicure hearings and interrogations that Thrawn and Ar'alani had endured. Under the circumstances, Simakro was mildly surprised the young woman was on her feet at all.
Excellent, Thrawn said.
Out of the corner of his eye, Simakro saw the other look at Chiri, make his own visual assessment of her condition, and come to the same conclusion.
You realize, of course, that peace has several different flavors.
Sir?
Simakro asked, frowning.
I was returning to the topic raised by Senior Commander Carol,
Thrawn said.
If the Ascendancy was conquered and our cities left in ruins, that would be peace of a sort.
That wasn't what I was suggesting, sir,
Carol said stiffly.
I hardly expected that it was,
Thrawn assured him.
But that would be a conqueror's concept of peace. A different conqueror might prefer the Chiss to be under his unbreakable control, to obey his orders without question. For him, that would be a version of peace.
I meant the kind of peace where no one is shooting at anyone else,
Carol said.
That's the kind most civilized people wish for, Thrawn said. But how is that to be achieved?
I don't know, Captain,
Carol said.
I'm not a philosopher.
For a moment, Thrawn eyed him in silence. Then he inclined his head slightly.
Understood. Go check on the plasmasphere supply. I suspect we'll be using them a great deal in the coming hours.
Yes, sir.
With clear relief, Carol headed across the bridge toward the weapons station.
He is a good officer, sir,
Simakro said quietly.
I know,
Thrawn said.
His chief failing is a lack of curiosity.
I'd have said no imagination.
All beings possess imagination to varying degrees,
Thrawn said.
It can be encouraged and nurtured, or can sometimes shine out in moments of stress. But curiosity is a choice. Some wish to have it, others don't. How is the peace he wished for to be achieved?
Through the mutual respect and goodwill of all beings, of course,
Simakro said, daring a small, ironic smile. Thrawn smiled back.
And how is that respect to be achieved?
Simakro's smile faded.
By proving beyond any doubt that the Ascendancy can and will respond to an attack with overwhelming force.
Indeed.
Thrawn said.
And that's why this mission isn't madness, but instead is vitally necessary.
Yes, sir,
Simakro said.
But I believe Commander Carol was referring less to the philosophy
than to the question of why only our two ships were sent. You don't believe the Springhawk and Vigilant will prove an even match for the Leo Ao and Heartworld's core defenses?
Sir Macro hesitated.
To be honest, sir, no. Perhaps a more complete understanding of the situation would help, Thrawn said. There are four different groups in play, each with their own interests and agenda. First are the Nicardune, who wanted to capture or destroy Admiral Aurelani at Primea, but didn't want the Ascendancy's vengeance to fall on either themselves or the Vac Combine. General Yiv, therefore, called in a force from the Leo Aeon regime to make the attack and take that risk.
I thought that connection hadn't been established.
If not, you need to believe that the Leo Aoi traveled all the way to Primea in order to attack a Chiss warship they couldn't possibly know was coming.
Sir Macro grimaced.
Yes, I see your point.
So Yiv has achieved the first of his objectives, though at the risk of sacrificing the strength of his Leo Aeon allies, Thrawn said. The second objective, now that he's turned our anger toward the Leo Aoi, is to gauge the Ascendancy's will to deliver a reprisal. That will help him revise his plans if necessary, as he looks forward to his ultimate war against us.
Which means sending only two ships wasn't a good move on the Council's part,
Sir Macro said.
It's going to make us look weak or indecisive. Yiv may indeed interpret it that way,
Thrawn agreed.
But he could also interpret it as supreme confidence. The two Chiss warships are deemed adequate to deliver the necessary message. Add to that, the Leo Aeon interest in keeping damage to their regime to a minimum.
Which we don't care about.
Perhaps not,
Thrawn said.
Still, if we can strike a balance between maximizing our message and minimizing our damage, the Leo Aoi may remember that restraint in the future.
Assuming they don't just turn the ships we don't destroy against us,
Sir Macro warned.
All the more reason to defeat Yiv and remove his stranglehold on the region as quickly as possible,
Thrawn said grimly.
Certainly the Leo Aoi wouldn't move against us without Nicardune pressure.
But the Sindicure must first recognize the threat,
Sir Macro pointed out. Though to be honest, he wasn't fully convinced of it either. It was a long way from gobbling up whisker cubs like the Leo Aeon regime to tangling with the Night Hunter that was the Chiss Ascendancy.
At any rate, meeting both those objectives requires us to do some damage without getting blown out of the sky.
There's that,
Thrawn agreed.
But the Admiral believes we can strike the necessary balance.
A moment,
Sir Macro said, frowning.
Are you saying Admiral Aurelani asked for only two ships? I thought that was the Syndic's decision.
They were happy enough to go along with it,
Thrawn said.
But no, it was the Admiral.
I'm glad she's confident,
Sir Macro muttered.
She is.
Thrawn cocked his head.
There's another reason for taking only a small force, though. A tactical reason. What do you think it might be?
I have no idea.
Think,
Thrawn urged.
You have the knowledge and vision. Apply them to the problem.
Sir Macro suppressed a grimace. This was what he got for suggesting Carol lacked imagination. Still, it was an intriguing question. Two Chiss ships. An unknown number of opponents. A tactical reason?
It will certainly be easier to evaluate the Leo Aeon tactics when they only have two of us to shoot at,
he commented, stalling for time while he tried to think.
Two Chiss ships. Exactly, Thrawn said, inclining his head. Well done, Mid-Captain.
Simakro blinked.
That was it?
Of course, Thrawn said. It comes down to minimizing variables. It would be even easier if we'd brought only one ship. But we didn't think the Council would accept that.
But you say the Sindicure was all for it?
Thrawn's gaze drifted away.
Some of the Syndics were reluctant to launch any attack at all. Believing Arulani and I deliberately provoked the Primea incident. Others, I'm sure, believe two ships will be enough. Others?
Others?
Simakro prompted. Thrawn shrugged.
I suspect a small number are hoping that both Arulani and I will be killed in the battle, thereby eliminating any future embarrassment we might bring to the Ascendancy.
Simakro stared at him.
That's paranoid,
Thrawn offered.
I was going to say outrageous, Simakro said. If the fleet has a problem with you or Admiral Arulani, the Council can discipline or demote you. It's not the Sindicure's job to meddle in those decisions.
But it is their job to do what's best for the Ascendancy, Thrawn said. Sometimes obligations and restrictions overlap.
Well, if they're looking for us to curl up and die for their convenience, they're going to be disappointed,
Simakro said firmly.
This is the Springhawk. We don't lose battles. Not to anyone. Guaranteed.
I look forward to yet again proving that,
Thrawn said.
I'll leave you the bridge now, Mid-Captain. Let me know if our Skywalker needs a rest break. Otherwise, I'll return before our rendezvous with the Vigilant.
With a final nod, he turned and retraced his steps to the hatchway. Simakro stared at the hatch for a long moment after he left, his blood burning inside him. He didn't especially like Thrawn. He certainly didn't like the way he skated to the edge of the line and occasionally blew straight past it. Sometimes he left chaos and messes behind him that other people had to clean up. And Simakro hated that too. But he also had no damn interest in the Aristocra, the Syndics, or anyone else outside the fleet chain of command interfering with military matters. The Springhawk and Vigilant would go to the Leo Aeon Heartworld as ordered. They would deliver the Ascendancy's message, and they would return. Both of them. And with any luck, they would return covered with honor. Because that, too, was how the Springhawk did things. Guaranteed. The two ships reached the rendezvous system, an easy jump by jump from the Leo Aeon Heartworld. There, the commanders and their senior officers met aboard the Vigilant for a final briefing and consultation. Simakro wondered if either Arulani or Thrawn would mention their private goal of delivering the Chiss message with as little damage to the Leo Aoi as possible. But neither of them did. Probably just as well, he decided. This whole thing was tangled enough without dragging in any last-minute complications. The conference ended, and the Springhawk's officers returned to their ship. Chiri and the Vigilant Skywalker were taken off their respective bridges and ensconced in their suites out of immediate harm's way. Arulani gave the order, and the ships entered hyperspace for the final jump. And then, they were there.
Status reports,
Thrawn called calmly from his command chair.
All systems ready,
Simakro said, pacing back and forth behind the helm, weapons, defense, and sensor stations.
Counting 12 Leo Aeon mid-sized warships in low orbit. Vigilant is moving inward.
Lieutenant Commander Asmodi, keep us in formation,
Thrawn ordered.
Let's see how long it takes them to notice us.
Four of the warships rising from orbit, Dalva reported from the sensor station.
her fingers tapping at keys.
Make that 6. No. Make it all 12.
Not long at all, apparently,
Thrawn said conversationally.
You'd think they had a guilty conscience,
Simacro commented, trying to keep his voice steady. 2 warships that size would be trivial for the Vigilant and Springhawk to handle. 4 would be reasonable. 6 would be a stretch. 12?
They're trying to frighten us away,
Thrawn said, as if he'd sensed Simacro's sudden concerns. Or more likely, he'd sensed the entire bridge crew's concerns.
Don't worry. They aren't all coming for us.
Certainly looks like they are,
Dalvu said under her breath.
Watch your tone, mid-commander,
Simacro admonished her quietly.
The senior captain knows what he's talking about.
Perhaps you should explain to her why they'll send no more than 4 ships against us,
Thrawn invited. Simacro frowned, eyeing the ships. What was Thrawn seeing that he wasn't? He smiled suddenly. It wasn't anything his commander was seeing, but simple tactical logic.
Because the Chiss have a reputation, he said. The Leo Aeon High Command knows all about it, and won't believe the Ascendancy has sent only 2 ships to slap them down for their attack at Primea. They'll assume we're either a diversion or part of a larger encirclement force. Either way, they'll want to keep the bulk of their force close in for protection.
Exactly, Thrawn said.
Watch for 4 of the ships to continue toward us, while the rest deploy in a defensive high orbit pattern.
A light blinked on the comm console.
Admiral is hailing them,
Simacro reported. Thrawn nodded.
Let's hear what she has to say.
The comm officer touched a switch.
This is Admiral Aralani of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet, commanding the Vigilant.
Aralani's clear voice came over the bridge speaker.
Forces of the Leo Aeon regime have knowingly and with prejudice attacked the ship of the Chiss Ascendancy. Have you any explanation to offer before we pass judgment?
Silence.
I say again,
Aralani said, then repeated the message.
The Nikajun are here,
Thrawn said quietly.
I'm not picking up any non-Leo Aeon ships, Dalvu said.
Then they're on the surface, or aboard Leo Aeon ships, Thrawn said. But the regime would certainly attempt to excuse their actions at Primea if they weren't afraid of reprisals from their allies.
Simacro thought back to what Thrawn had said about the Nikardun sacrificing the Leo Aoi to keep themselves and the Vax out of the Chiss target zone.
So the Nikardun just let them walk to the slaughter? He asked. Doesn't say much about their value to the Nikardun.
More likely it indicates the even greater value General Yiv places in the Vax Combine,
Thrawn said.
I see we have 4 ships approaching.
Simacro looked at Dalvu's profile, caught the sour look on her face. Thrawn had called the exact number of the Leo Aeon response, and for some reason his casual show of competence annoyed her.
Confirmed, Senior Captain, she said reluctantly.
Thrawn touched a switch on his command chair.
Admiral, I believe our opponents are on their way.
I concur, Senior Captain.
Aralani's voice came back.
Ready to deploy probe.
Springhawk stands ready,
Thrawn confirmed.
Deploy at will.
Simacro craned his neck to look out the viewport at the Vigilant, running in the near distance off the Springhawk's portside bow. There was a flicker of thruster fire, and the probe shot away from the larger ship.
Probe away,
he confirmed to Thrawn.
Acknowledged.
Simacro watched as the object accelerated toward the 4 Leo Aeon ships, which had now positioned themselves in a vertical diamond formation. This whole scenario was, at least on the surface, exactly the same trick Thrawn had used at Rapak to set up the Springhawk's capture of that Nicardoon patrol ship. The probe, really just one of the Vigilance shuttles, was playing decoy, giving the Leo AOI something to focus on, while the real threat lay elsewhere. At least that was what Thrawn and Ar'alani hoped they would see. The question now was, how much of the Rapak incident the Nicardoon had shared with their allies? And, even more important, if they'd also shared whatever countermeasures they'd come up with for any future uses of the Gambit. Apparently, the answer to both was yes.
"Probe is faltering,"
Dalvu announced.
"Vigilant seems to be losing control."
"Comm interference increasing,"
Simacro confirmed, peering at the comm displays.
"Leo AOI are trying to jam Vigilant's control signal. To jam and override."
Simacro looked at the tactical. The probe's original vector had been toward the ventral ship in the Leo AON formation. Now it was wavering back and forth as the Vigilant and the Leo AOI fought for control. The Leo AOI won. With a final skittering surge, the probe settled down on a new vector, one that would take it harmlessly through the center of the Leo AON formation, and from there to disappear into the empty light years of the chaos.
"At least we know now that they can learn,"
Simacro commented.
"Indeed,"
Thrawn agreed.
"And as you can see, Mid-Captain, that can be a good or a bad thing."
"Yes, sir," Simacro said.
The probe was nearly to the Leo Aeon ships, moving steadily now under the control of its new masters. It entered the open space in the center of the formation.
"Fire,"
Thrawn said. At their current distance, Simacro knew, certainly against warships equipped with electrostatic barriers, a spectrum laser attack would be not just futile, but laughable. But the warships weren't Thrawn's target. Instead, the Springhawk's lasers flashed a burst of energy into the small, unprotected shuttle. And as the hull shattered, the four breaching missiles that had been packed aboard shot outward, one toward each of the Leo Aeon warships. The Leo Aeoi saw the attack coming, of course, and even at so close a range, they had enough time to respond. But with a friendly ship directly behind each incoming missile, none of the warships could launch the level of countermeasures necessary to fully neutralize the attack. A few laser shots tentatively lanced out, and one of the missiles was caught and disintegrated. But the blast merely released the warhead's acid globs, leaving the deadly fluid to continue onward toward its target. A second later, as the warships tried in vain to move out of harm's way, the missiles struck. The actual physical damage was probably minimal. Even the incredibly strong acid that breachers were loaded with could penetrate only so deep into a warship's hull, and the lateral spread of a single missile's worth was only so great. Electronics, sensors, and weapons systems would be damaged, but that damage would be fairly localized. But the psychological effect more than made up for it. All four Leo Aeon ships lurched violently, breaking formation. A second later, the moment of instinctive panic seemed to subside, and the captains began systematically rotating away from the Chiss ships, trying to turn their new points of vulnerability out of the reach of enemy lasers. They had each managed about a 40-degree turn when the Vigilance lasers flashed out. And the second shuttle, the dark, silent, cold, all but undetectable second shuttle that had been towed invisibly behind the first, shattered and sent its own cargo of breacher missiles into the reeling Leo Aeon warships.
"Leo Aeon regime, I'm still waiting for that explanation,"
Ar'alani's voice came over the speaker.
"Perhaps you should start with an apology, and we'll go from there.
Leo Aoan ships falling back,
Dalvu reported.
Two other ships rising from the defense orbit.
Admiral?
Thrawn asked.
Apparently, they're not yet ready to concede,
Aurelani said, her voice icy.
Fine. We're here to deliver a message. Let's deliver it.
Acknowledged,
Thrawn said.
Springhawk?
Prepare for battle.
There was a soft double thump from somewhere nearby. Chiri, sitting in her chair pretending to draw, gave a violent jerk.
What was that?